Just a few years ago, nobody knew what an app was. Today, many of us wouldn't know what to do without our favorite mobile software applications. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today, we hear from mobile app and tech developers across the state and learn about some newly created apps. Among them, a missing child alert app inspired by the disappearance of two Evansdale girls, Trauma Hawk, an app developed for first responders, and an app created by a former state senator to help voters. Join our discussion as we go app happy after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It was just a few years ago that nobody knew what an app was. And today, many of us wouldn't know what to do without our favorite mobile software application. So this hour, in our version of Science Friday, I guess you could say, we want to hear from mobile app and tech developers across our state, learn about some newly created apps from developers in Iowa. Later in the hour, we'll learn about a missing child alert app inspired by the disappearance of those two Evansdale girls, Trauma Hawk, that's another app being developed for first responders, and an app created by a former state senator to help voters. That's coming up a little bit later. I want to reach out to you and have you tell us what's your new favorite app, and one you've discovered that has made your life somehow easier or more enjoyable. And why don't you do that over our social media? Perhaps you have an app that's connected to Facebook or Twitter. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us, first of all, Jim Kramer is a University of Iowa professor in computer science. He has research that focuses on interactive virtual environments, computer graphics, also mobile applications. Welcome back to our program, Jim.
Hi, Ben. Nice to be here.
Great. We wanted to have you go back over a class. I know you're teaching again this semester. We had some of your students in last semester, a class on app development. What sort of students are taking the class?
Well, actually, I'm not teaching it this semester. I taught it last spring and in spring 2010, and will be teaching it again in spring 2013.
Gotcha.
And in 2013, it will be a brand new, different version of it, where there will be 25 students here at UI working closely with 25 students at one of the leading universities in Vietnam to develop apps together over a distance of 8,000 miles.
Yeah, what a neat idea! What do you get from that that working together between Iowa and Vietnam? Why?
Well, we've developed a relationship with some Vietnamese universities over the last few years and have a number of students coming from there. And I just thought a lot of times apps and other software are developed in teams, and these days increasingly over great distances. And this just adds a little extra to the class to say, hey, let's get used to working at a distance and working with people who are not your closest friends all the time.
That's exciting. So will you be traveling to Vietnam before?
Yeah, I'll go a few times during the semester. It'll be taught sort of televideo both ways. So I'll do some of the lectures from here with people there watching online, and then a few lectures from there with people back here watching online. But most of the work will happen outside of lecture time, where the students will interact over Facebook, Skype and email and all those methods for working on their projects together.
Mm-hmm. This app development class idea is relatively new, an interesting one. So, of course, apps have exploded. I don't know if there's many more than 500,000 apps out there available on all these platforms. Do you know the number?
I don't know the number, no. But, that sounds approximately, that's right. The right ballpark, yeah.
So it only figures that we're educating students, putting that as a tool, tool to create apps in their tool bag.
Right.
When you approach a semester with students who are eager to learn about app development, how do you go through the semester? What do you do?
Well, in the beginning, my goal with a class is to get people to work on projects together, and so that's part of it. And because learning to develop apps is mostly you have to know how to program already, to do software programming already, and I'm more interested in saying, While you're learning a new tool to develop programming skills, I'm interested in having you work in a team and work in a group and think about design. Because with apps, I mean, what's exciting about apps, I think, is it's like, I mean, when a lot of times when people were kids, they say, I want to make a book, you know, but there wasn't an avenue for getting it out there to the world. Sometimes a kid says, "Ooh, I write a 10-page book, and maybe somebody would read it."
Right, but I have to sell it to a publisher first. Right,
and you know, the app world is very exciting because you know there's this opportunity to express your creativity, and maybe it's much more personal than writing apps for applications for a desktop machine, because people are going to carry this around on their person, this phone that they use all the time, and you know, there's this chance that 10 or 100 or 50,000 people are going to download your app and you know, your little game you made.
And isn't it true that just like, well, a musician nowadays used to have to go through a record company, sell it there first. Now that middleman is cut out of it, where you can, from your home, given the skills, develop an app and have it be fabulously popular.
Right. And there is this extra challenge of it. It has both a deep technical challenge, the programming aspect, but there's also the design and the more liberal artsy aspect. The art and graphic design of an app is very important. So that's why often teams are important, because usually those skills aren't in the same person.
From the past class and past students, can you list off some of the more popular or interesting ones that have come up from students in your class?
Oh. Wow, that's hard. Let's see. The one app you'll be hearing about later today, the one for injury sites, the person who developed that app, she has, I think, 17 apps in the store now. A number of them are educational, where kids practice math, the standard license plate game that people play in a long car trip, you know, finding the 50 license plates. And so there are useful apps. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this way. So I assume part of your class, they come in with software programming skills. That's a prerequisite, sort of?
Yes. I mean, people can try to start programming from the beginning. I think to start creating apps from nothing. I mean, the tools that the people like Apple and Microsoft people and provide you let you get started quickly. It seems like you can build an app right away, but quickly people will find out they should have some training. Having a couple of programming courses is really useful. One of the interesting things about that now, though, is there are a lot of free, organized, well-done courses on the web.
Okay. What makes a great app idea? When we get away from the technical side, and I imagine in class you vet these, trade ideas, and you try to poke holes in them to make sure you've got a good idea before you put umpteen hours into it, right?
Right. Often people are ambitious and want apps that do a whole lot of things. And I think a lot of the most successful apps are very specific and somewhat narrow. There are a zillion apps out there, and you want to do a really good job and serve, identify your market. Who do you want to serve? And what do you want this to do for them? And how convenient can you make it? How pleasant can you make it for them to use your app among the others that are similar to it?
We asked on our social media website, on our Facebook and Twitter, we asked our listeners what their favorite apps are. Here are some of the responses that we have, Jim, and here's exactly what we're talking about. A comment from Carrie: I like Foursquare for finding adventures while traveling. I guess I don't know that one. Are you acquainted with that one?
Yeah, I don't really use it, but it's a thing where people say go into their favorite restaurant, and it indicates, say, on a map or to the other Foursquare users that they're there. And I guess if you visit enough, you get to be mayor of that place and things like that. So.
Right. Catherine says, and this goes right along with your comment about keep it simple. She says, I like the countdown clock that is on my phone. It's nice because I can give tasks a time limit, and it keeps me from messing around on the internet forever. Michelle on our Facebook says, I like the TripAdvisor app for finding restaurants while on the road. Also, the Sibley Birding app, great for IDing birds in the field, even including bird songs. That's interesting. How many hours does it take typically, a range of hours does it take to create an app?
Oh, I mean, you know, if it was a very simple app, people can create one in a few hours. If you want to, sometimes we make apps for our lab to help out with experiments. If we just want to make a little stopwatch that's particular to our experiment we're doing, it can be done in an hour or two. But other ones have, you know, million-dollar budgets and many people working for months and months and months,
mm-hmm.
like any other software.
On the other side, investing time and money into it, what could be the potential payoff? I suppose your app could flop and it's just something that you did for yourself, kind of a hobby. But the other side of it, you can be very successful, make some money, right?
Right, right. I mean, I can give an example of one that's quite technical and interesting and had a big budget, which and I think is a great idea. This is one where you would hold your phone, say, over a menu in another language, and it would, you know, you'd see that menu through the phone in a sense because it'd be showing you a picture of it, but it would translate all the text that it was seeing into your language right on top of the menu. So it's like augmented reality in a sense. But the words would change right in front of your eyes.
I've seen something like that with a magnifying glass app where the camera actually magnifies it. But then you're saying it overlays.
It identifies all the text on there. And you can imagine, so you grab all the letters off there, you send them off to Google Translate or something, and then lay them back over top.
Wow. That blows my mind.
But yeah. that was an app, I don't know how successful it is now, WordLens, I think was the name of it. And I think they had a team of quite, you know, high-end developers and there's some high technology there, and they spend $1 million or $2 million developing that.
Okay, very quickly, I know you mm-hmm. have something to do with some health-related apps coming up. In 30 seconds, tell us what those are.
Well, we have we work with the Computational Epidemiology Group here, headed by Dr. Phil Polgreen, and one of the apps that's going to come out in a few days is for people around the country to report refusal of vaccines. There's a lot of concern about different reasons for refusing vaccines in certain mm-hmm. healthcare situations. There's one for health practitioners to report unusual infections. You know, there's certain infections that don't occur enough for lots and lots of people to make it into, you know, big play. But if you can check with various people, what have they seen this unusual thing, you can learn a lot of and maybe get help.
We'll check back with you as those develop. Jim Cramer, sure. University of Iowa professor in computer science. Thanks for touching bases with us. Bye now.
Bye.
There's an app for that. If you need to rat-a-tat-tat.
There's an app for that.
Gotta practice singing scat.
Billy-dee-dop-de-dop-de-dop.
Wanna meet a boy named Matt?
Hi, I'm Matt. Nice to meet you.
Count to 10 in no time flat.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
There's an app for that.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. A smartphone app being developed at the University of Iowa may one day help save lives. It's called TraumaHawk. And here to tell us about it is Daniel McGehee. He is the project's principal investigator, director of the Human Factors and Vehicle Safety Research Division at the University of Iowa Public Policy Center, and adjunct professor of mechanical and industrial engineering at the UI College of Engineering. Dan McGehee, welcome to our program.
Thanks. Good morning, Ben.
Tell us how TraumaHawk works.
Well, this is a first-of-its-kind app that essentially is used to beam crush information, if you will, from the vehicle to the trauma room. And we have pretty good evidence to show that if you can see what a car looks like, we can begin to predict what the injuries might be.
Mm-hmm. So we have first responders. There is a crash, and we have the first responders, police officers and so forth, ambulance workers, outfitted with smartphones that have TraumaHawk. They approach the scene. They, of course, tend to what first, and where does TraumaHawk fit in that procedure?
Well, the first duties that all of those different emergency medical officials have at the scene is to do their medical checks and attend to the patient, secure the scene around the crash in terms of traffic and so forth. But there tends to be a pause after all of that work is done. And that's where we are looking at training law enforcement and some EMS folks out there to use this app where they take about 6 photographs of the vehicle from different angles. And they then shoot that information essentially to the trauma room here at the University of Iowa, where we have specially trained trauma folks that can take a look at those images and take and see specific crush elements of the vehicle. So, for instance, if you have a low side impact and you have about 12 inches or more of crush, so the vehicle essentially is dented in 12 or more inches, that's highly probable of a pelvic fracture to a driver or a passenger, depending on what side that crush occurs on.
How does having an app with digital images transferred improve upon what you just did, which is describe a crash and the crush of a vehicle? I see the image when you describe it to me.
Because you don't really have a lot of time when you're on the scene to provide that kind of description. And when folks are in the trauma room, they have much more time to take a look at other elements of the vehicle and how it's damaged, details of where the seatbelt is, and so forth. And then if, in the case of a person who is pinned in the vehicle, they can see how the vehicle is essentially wrapped around them, and that can also provide information about how they might be injured as well.
So we would anticipate that there would be pictures of crash victims included. No reason not to do that. You would have pictures of injuries, possibly.
We do have a feature in the app where we essentially have the person from the scene put their finger on their face to blot them out, because that's not important information in terms of understanding who specifically that person is. But most of the time, the people that are in a crash like this are extricated fairly quickly, and so we would get those photos without the person in there. But it's certainly possible that they'll be there.
I wonder, with ER personnel, if you would know if that extra bit of mental preparation could be important as well.
Yes, in fact, that's one of the issues in working with some of my other colleagues, Dr. Chris Baresh from the emergency department. They're telling us that this really helps them develop a mental model of the sort of the treatment protocol to be more specific. In general, they're going to be very much into doing basic triage and scans of a person when they come in, but this helps them understand what some additional details of the injuries might be about.
When do you believe this will be in use, Trauma Hawk?
1 year from now, we're going to deliver the final application for this proof of concept, and we'll be working with Eastern Iowa EMS in the meantime, law enforcement, Iowa State Patrol, Johnson County Ambulance, Linn County, and so we'll be training essentially the Eastern Iowa region on how to use this application, but we're also looking for usability information, because it's very important that we understand how this system works and how it doesn't, so we can make it better.
Are there any concerns about data security in such a system and transferring photos and personal information?
Absolutely. That's a key element of this project from the very front end, is to understand how these data are secure. Like I mentioned, from the scene, they'll be able to blot out the person's face. They come into the trauma room, and then they become part of the patient record, which is secure. And then the app is designed to have essentially perishable photos. And what that means is that after they are sent, they essentially vanish from the phone. So they're not part of a smartphone's normal photographic photo album. They essentially disappear automatically.
Mm. Dan McGehee, the project's principal investigator of Trauma Hawk, director of the Human Factors and Vehicle Safety Research Division at the University of Iowa Public Policy Center. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
Yes, thank you.
This is River to River. My next guest is Tori McBroom. He's a web developer for Martin Brothers Distribution and owner of BroomBiz LLC in Cedar Falls. Hi, Tori.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You developed an app in reaction to the disappearance of Elizabeth Collins and Lyric Cook Morrissey. These are the cousins from northeastern Iowa. From Evansdale, who went missing in the summer on July 13th. Your Missing Child Alert app allows parents and other concerned individuals to share a photograph of the child with all Facebook friends, and it's available both in an iPhone and Android device. When did this idea come to you?
It came to me about a week or so after the girls went missing. I was just blown away by the response from the community, how everybody got together to help out and look for the girls. And I just wanted to basically help out in the way that I best could. And being as that I'm a web developer by day, I figured that creating this app and helping spread the word when people go missing would be the best thing I could do.
What are you doing that hadn't been done before with this app?
How it works is there's a nonprofit called National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And whenever they add a missing child to their database, it automatically updates the app. And then it sends an alert through your phone. So then you can go check it out or share it.
Mm-hmm. So it is actually working with other missing children alerts to sort of thicken the net so that we can locate them more quickly or easier.
That's correct.
Okay. Who do you expect would use this app primarily?
I would hope everybody would download the app. It basically just runs in the background. You don't have to do anything. You just sit back, and when an alert happens, you can check it out or you can share it to help spread the word.
As I mentioned, it's downloadable for free. Both iPhone and Android devices have it. So when I pick out another state, that's that state's most up-to-date missing children's list.
That's correct.
Okay. So you can't list something yourself?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
So this all comes from verified missing children's lists.
That's right.
Okay. Who is regulating the content?
The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Okay. And what did it cost to create this app?
A lot of time. It took me 2 months to put it together. And then a little bit of out-of-pocket money. I mean, I hired or outsourced a little bit of the work. A few functions that I couldn't quite figure out, I outsourced. So, yeah, mostly time and a little bit of money.
Can you estimate the cost of making this app?
Probably between my time and money I spent, a couple $1,000.
This is your first mobile app, isn't it?
That's right.
Okay. You plan on developing more in the future?
Well, when the next idea hits, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, let's talk about those ideas because you also help others develop apps. Let me put it to you this way. What questions should you ask yourself if you think you have a good idea for a mobile app and you want to test it with some, let's say, litmus questions?
What I first do is when I have an idea for an app, I go out to the marketplace or the app store, and then I'll see if there's already apps like that out there.
Mm-hmm.
If there isn't, then that's, you know, that can be a good sign that your app could be profitable or get a lot of downloads.
Is it important in that phase then to keep it somewhat secret so nobody steals your idea?
Yeah. Yep. When I outsourced my app, I had them sign a NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, just to make sure that they wouldn't steal the idea and go out and do it themselves.
What advice do you have for someone wanting to do the same, who thinks maybe they have what it takes to make an app or web applications? What sort of person do you have to be?
You have to be driven, patient. Like I said, it took me 2 months to create this app. Yeah, I mean, it's not easy work. You know, it's a lot of time involved, a lot of work involved, but it pays off in the end. So.
Okay. Tori McBroom, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tori McBroom is the owner of BroomBiz LLC, his business in Cedar Falls, and creator of the Missing Child Alert app, which you can download for free for any iPhone or Android device. Thank you, Tori.
Thank you.
Coming up in just a moment after a break, we continue in our app happy state with more mobile applications created right here in Iowa, including a garage sale app that brings order to potentially chaotic cash transactions and a mobile app to aid Iowa voters. Back in just a few minutes with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Got a chimp who likes to chat. There's an app for that.
Our furry friends on Sesame Street helping us out this hour as we talk about apps and tech developments. Innovations going on right here in Iowa. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. What's your favorite new app, one you've discovered or perhaps one you made yourself? We've been talking about it with app makers in Iowa this hour, and perhaps you can do that through our social media Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, or tweet us at IPR Talk. A number of app makers we have yet to talk to. We want to quickly check in with one of our listeners, Dan, calling from Des Moines. Hi, Dan.
Good afternoon.
I understand you collect apps made in Iowa, or you've had have a list of them. Tell us.
Yeah, I have a list. I made it real easy for people to follow. It's on Twitter. It's just called Apps Iowa, APPSIOWA. I even just posted a few moments ago the missing child app link to find that by Tori McBroom.
Mm-hmm. Very good. What other sort of apps do you have listed there?
Well, I've got apps from some people at our Startup City in Des Moines. I've got apps from Modnar Enterprises out of Iowa City, who seems to be the winner for the most apps originated in Iowa by far.
Mm.
My modest, I have a small company on the side that also produces apps. I've got three of them for the iPad from phoneapp.com, and the, and I have those.
Which of your apps are you most proud of?
Symbol, I think it helps a lot of writers. I've reached both commercial and education users. That it basically gives writers a chance to go with their iPads and be free. They can get the Pilcros and do superscripts, so they can do footnotes and pages and keynotes and stuff like that. And really, it's just a versatile app. Over 1,000 of them have been sold in bulk, which means people buy them for classes or companies and through Apple's discount program, and then. The funnest app is probably Clapboard, and that one's sold internationally and stuff very well. People also use that sometimes in a class or whatever. It's more for fun use, but all of my apps are for creative, to originate new stuff, to kind of like the Legos of ideas.
So you're giving people the tools to create other things.
I want to make videos, write stuff. Talk about their chess games. GameBluff is a program for STEM education, so you can tweak your chess moves to your friends or colleagues or contests.
Dan, we have plenty of other people to talk to, but please tell us again where people can find you on Twitter.
It's Apps Iowa. Just follow Apps Iowa. There's hundreds of people already following there, and you'll see apps talked about on this show, and I've collected numerous as many. People as I can find around the state that make apps in Iowa. Go there first before you, when you're on the App Store. There's no way to know geographically in the App Store where to find things. Apps Iowa is designed to help all the app developer people. There's ham radio stuff, shopping, free games, really cool games. I out of Altoona made a game called Flyboy that's really super incredible.
Okay, Dan, we'll have to let people explore that on their own. We've got a lot of people to talk to. Thank you, Dan from Des Moines. Dan Arthur. Telling us about where you can find Iowa apps. Let's talk with another app maker in our Cedar Falls studio. Paul Farmer is with us. He's the innovation officer at Viridian Credit Union in our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon.
I understand you've come up with a garage sale app. Now, how can you improve on a garage sale? I grew up in Cedar Falls, and my mother used to take me along with her to discover all the treasures at garage sales. You can't tell me you found something wrong with traditional garage sales that you can improve upon.
Well, I did, actually, and there was a part of the garage sale that it just absolutely drove me nuts. My wife loved to take part of these different garage sales, and therefore I loved to take part of these different garage sales, so... being a part of that process, there was there's one piece that always drove me crazy, and that was we always had these sales with neighbors or friends, and so keeping track of whose money's whose and, what exactly went to each person just drove me crazy. So when I went out and looked for an app that would help me manage that process and it wasn't there, I started to develop one myself and came up with the Garage Sale Checkout app.
Garage Sale Check. Does this get rid of the masking tape tags that you then take and put them on your special piece of cardboard and then,
right. Well, yes and no. So the masking tape still could be there, but what it does do is I don't have to collect that masking tape back. So rather than notebooks full of stickers, as items come forward, you just log in the app. The amounts and, it helps check out that person in front of you. And then in the background is keeping track of what's your money and what's mine.
And I understand you worked on this with a neighbor of yours who works at Phantom EFX in Cedar Falls.
Well, he used to, and actually he has his own business now called Distal Twitch. And together we've partnered up to create this app. and have a couple more in the hopper as well.
Oh, interesting. And we want to put out there, I understand you have a couple videos on YouTube for this app called Garage Sale Checkout.
Correct.
That people can find on YouTube.
Yep.
Thank you, Paul. Let's go to Steve Grubbs. He's involved with an app that a few days ago Iowa Secretary of State Matt Schultz announced, a mobile app for Iowa voters, the Iowa Secretary of State election app known as, Iowa SOS app, available on Android, iPhone use, as well as the iPad. Free download in the App Store, the Google Play Store. Steve Grubbs is on the phone with us, a creator of it, president and CEO of Victory Enterprises, Inc. Hi, Steve.
Hi, glad to be with you.
Want to mention your former Iowa State representative and chair of the Republican Party of Iowa. And tell us, what does this app do for voters?
Well, we specialize in all sorts of apps, including government apps. And this one, the Secretary of State wanted to figure out a way to help people find their polling place. So if you're out driving around on Election Day, you don't have to call your local auditor's office. You just download the app and put in your address, your zip code, and it should tell you your not only your polling place, your precinct location, but it should map it for you, so it'll show you directly how to get there if you don't know where it is. And it also allows you to register to vote. You know, some of these things start with the app, and then they go back to some old world ways because of laws and computer systems in government. Mm-hmm. But as time goes by, it'll be a more seamless technology approach all the way through for absentee ballots, registering, and that type of thing.
So there's also, if you're wondering if you're registered, you could use this app.
Right. You can verify whether you're registered. And, you know, most people generally have a sense of that. But you know, this can be a valuable tool for new people that have moved into the state, young people. You know, and we think that, you know, for the universities and for new voters, this was especially a valuable tool.
Mm-hmm. And we can find it by searching either in the Apple Store, Google,
right,
or the Google Play Store, Iowa SOS app. Would that be the keyword?
That would be perfect, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we do not vote with this app, though, do we, Steve?
That's right. You know, we're a few years away from that. And
do you think that day will come?
Yeah, I do think that day will come. You know, in some places in the country, you can vote online now, and you know, mostly that's being experimented with. And there's still a lot of concern with you know, anonymous out there hacking various things, and traditions
Absolutely.
Will take a while to go away, but I think that'll come, and it has to.
You think we'll leap from hanging chads in Florida to voting with our iPads or iPhones?
I do. And, you know, if you can bank online, which is one of the most important transactions, it has to be secure, I'm absolutely certain we should be able to vote online.
Okay. Tell us again, how can we get in touch or download this app?
So this app can be found in the Google Play Store or the Apple Store, and just search as Iowa Secretary of State. And, you know, also, while we're talking about it, the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, we created a great app for people to find farmers markets across Iowa, and that's a wonderful tool.
Oh, really? But mention any other apps that you're making at Victory Enterprises. Any others that you...
So, yeah, so this farmers market app, there are over 200 farmers markets in Iowa. Most people don't realize it. And so in our community alone, there are three. So this lets you know where they are, lets you rate them. It's a little bit like Urban Spoon. For the city of Cedar Rapids, we built an app where people, if they see a pothole, they can take a picture of it, and it automatically sends the GPS coordinates to the city engineering department so they can look at the pothole and determine, you know, is this a serious one? Do we have to get on it right away, or can we put it on the schedule? And they know exactly where it's at. So, you know, apps are opening up government to people in ways that were never possible before. And, you know, that's sort of our niche is, you know, corporate and government apps. And, mm-hmm. and we're excited about the opportunities that they present.
As this area blossoms, apps, mobile applications, where are we in this progression, in this blossoming of mobile applications for software? Are we at the thin edge of the wedge, or are we advanced quite a bit?
No, I think, for example, in websites started coming on big in 96, and by probably 2005, they had hit full maturity and everybody having one. But they continued to innovate and do, you know, much better things after 2005. I would say comparing us to that time period, we're probably in the year 1999 right now. There are a lot of apps out there, but they've got a long way to go. And most companies, most entities don't have an app yet. You know, but companies like, for example, there's a company in Des Moines called Graham Construction. And, you know, they came on last year with an app where you can open your app and actually watch your hospital being built now. And so, you know, but they're the only construction company in Iowa I know that has one like that. And there's dozens of construction companies. So, you know, others will start to catch up, but it'll take 3 to 5 years for it to become, you know, a standard practice in businesses.
Going back to this voting app from the Iowa Secretary of State, how unique is that in this country for states to have this? Is Iowa at the forefront?
We are at the forefront. You know, Iowa state government is, you know, you wouldn't maybe think of us as one of the most advanced in the country, but, you know, I like to say we're in the heart of Silicon Valley because there were only two states that had a farmer's market app from the state government, and this was, we're one of the first two or three states to have these voter registration and precinct finding apps from state government. So, you know, it's pretty cool. And it's a message I think that we need to get out more. You know, Iowa, sometimes we struggle to develop jobs and our economy beyond the ag sector, which is very important to us. But technology you can do from anywhere. And we have affordable labor in Iowa. If our schools and our universities would focus on creating more students who know COCO and Objective-C and some of these programming languages, right, Iowa could explode as a technology hub.
That's exactly, I think, what our computer science professor in the first half hour, Jim Cramer of the University of Iowa, is doing. Steve Grubbs, thank you very much, President and CEO of Victory Enterprises. We appreciate you joining us today.
My pleasure.
Our Facebook and Twitter account is active. Facebook post from Mary, one of our listeners. We ask a favorite app. She says, Urban Spoon is unbeatable. Information listings, valuable user reviews of restaurants, coffee shops, wherever you go. She suggests Urban Spoon. A tweet from David. He says, Iowa is the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. From Dwolla to Shopper, ShopIR, Iowa is the place to be. I guess Dwolla helps people send money to friends or businesses. Shopper helps people find business promotions, deals, and so forth, with an emphasis on buying local. Interesting. A lot of apps out there. Obviously a huge and blossoming field. We want to finish up the hour with a guest in our Cedar Falls studio, Mark Doden. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us. We're getting a little way from apps to other new software developments in the state. You're one of the founders of Marmoset. That's a tech company based in Cedar Falls?
There are three partners, and we're all native Iowans. I was born and raised Cedar Falls. The other two were out of Ames, Iowa. We worked together for years in the video games industry, and out of Cedar Falls, Iowa. Recently have spread out, but we still primarily run our business through the web, and our home office is here in Iowa.
Sprang from a company that I'm not sure if it exists anymore, 8Monkey Labs.
That was the company where we all kind of joined forces. We started that up in 2005 as a video game development studio. We found some investment partners back here in Cedar Falls, and we developed first-person shooters for PC and Xbox 360. And recently, starting last year, we kind of broke away, myself and the other two development partners, to really focus in on the technology that's going on behind the scenes of making video games and offer that to other.
You're making the video technology that really wows us. 3D artists, you provide them with programs to create, I understand, sort of models, texture sets, the animations. Tell us about what you're developing. What's on the cutting edge that you're working with?
Well, product we sell and license out is called Marmoset Toolbag, and it really is, in a traditional video game development team, there's a big team of sort of technical artists in the middle between the artists and the programmers that are kind of working day and night to keep all the different departments working well together and giving the artists a tool set to kind of see their work to see what it's going to be in an end result, to see it in the environment that it's meant to exist in for the final product. Mm-hmm. And what we really do is we kind of find a niche market with the independent contract artists and also students learning their 3D art craft to really kind of provide that middleman in one single desktop app. And it's a real-time rendering toolkit, so they can load up their custom models and textures and animations and showcase them to potential employers or potential clients that may hire them for independent contract work, and really just give them a leg up to show their art in the best light possible.
Now, I went to your website and looked at the Marmoset tool bag, a video of it too. It's really quite incredible. You have a, well, I'll call it a humanoid because he has someone like that walking.
Game, yeah.
We would be worried about someone walking down the street who looks like that, wouldn't we? But tell us, for those of us who aren't game developers, explain briefly how this program is used. What are you altering? What are you shifting, or what are the game developers shifting with that software?
Every artist starts with their 3D model, which is essentially a virtual sculpt of the object of the art asset they're creating, whether it's a character or a house or an environment piece of art. They load it up into our software, and that's where they can really they apply their materials. Materials is just kind of tells the video game engine how it's going to look, what colors are going to be rendered, what details are on the surface of this object, and then beyond that, they can set up a custom lighting environment. So they can make it look like it's existing in a nighttime environment, an urban environment, you know, a natural woods, outdoor environment.
When he passes under a tree, a shadow comes over him.
Correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. Now, lots of data being transferred, isn't there?
Yes, there is. There's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes, and that really is – it's really something the artists never really want to pay attention to or really worry about. They just kind of want everything to work as they expect it to. So we offer, you know, our app kind of takes care of that burden for them. They don't have to sink a lot of development time into worrying about the engineering side or the mathematical side or what's happening to make something look exactly how they need it to. We just give them the buttons and the sliders to get it there.
Mark Doden of Marmoset. Now, moving from Eight Monkey Labs, which made video games, you said first shooter games, to this venture, which creates tools for game developers. Why that leap?
Well, I guess, it was sort of a happy accident that kind of, happened at the same time as sort of the recession and sort of like the, you know, we had finished up our first project, Darkest of Days, back in 2009, and we were seeking new development funding for new intellectual property, new game projects, and really just nationwide, there was a freeze on new investment, especially in the games industry. And so while we're scrambling to find new development deals, we kind of just our artist community online. A lot of the people that post on forums, you know, message boards really support each other in the art community there. They started calling just friends of friends, had heard about this internal tool set we used for our own game development. And really we found a need for it that way. We kind of just put our new project ambitions on hold for a few months, kind of wrapped up an internal tool set we had developed just for our own team and pushed it out the door for, you know, and to see what happened. And it's been steadily growing ever since.
How close is it? Is there an industry standard that you're competing against?
Sure. Yeah. The industry standard is, you know, especially in video games, you know, everyone's breaking ground and innovating graphically, like what they can put on screen, how realistic they can make it look. That stuff's changing, you know, almost on a month, you know, week to week basis. And so because we're just providing the tool set that, you know, for the artists to use, you know, we can kind of stay agile and keep up to speed with all the latest developments and offer all the latest rendering technologies to each artist.
There's an interesting idea, a term that we came across in researching for this show, Uncanny Valley. This is a hypothesis in 3D computer animation. Tell us quickly what that is.
You know?
I got you there.
You may have stumped me.
Okay. Well, it has to do with the way human replicas look and act, but not perfectly acting as human beings. No? Let me ask you about Williams Interactive, because you are also a producer of the online gaming with Williams Interactive LLC, and we focused on early mobile apps earlier this hour. Mobile casino games are becoming more popular, aren't they?
Very, very quickly they are. Yes.
Have anything to do with those?
I'm not directly part of the mobile team, but it sort of bridges the gap there. I've been working with Williams Interactive on some of their online, especially their social casino products as well, and just kind of online in general. There's a huge boost in North America to just the slot games market, poker networks, and this, you know, kind of all the bringing all the casino experiences to every single household, to every mobile device, to, you know, everyone with a web browser. And so, yeah, there's been a Williams Interactive, formerly Phantom EFX, they were acquired by WMS Gaming this summer. They've really just made a huge push into the social and mobile markets. There's been a huge, huge growing market and boost in revenue potential there. Mm-hmm. As slots are, I think, now the number one most popular genre on Facebook and even mobile devices worldwide.
Mark Doden, one of the founders of Marmoset, a tech company in Cedar Falls, we appreciate you being with us for this part of River to River. And good luck. We'll check back in with you to see whether the kind of technology you're developing here in, what'd they say, Silicon Valley?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Mark, thank Doden, you very much.
Thank you. And thanks also to Steve Grubbs again, and also in our Cedar Falls studio, Paul Farmer. The hour's gone by very quickly. We'll have to do this again in a few months' time, because this tech world is booming, changing very quickly, and we like to keep track of it to the extent that we can. Thanks for being with us today. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan in Cedar Falls. Thanks going out to Tony Daner. Our theme music written and performed by the River Monks. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend.